Hello, everybody. Thanks for being here one more time today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD, Get Shit Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team of Click Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, an AI-HR tech company that I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe at GSD that intellectual capacity is evenly spread, but opportunities are not. With that, I'd like to introduce an incredible guest for another exciting episode. This is our top global startups. And today, our guest is Damian Butters, CEO and founder of TDRI, a visionary entrepreneur who is reshaping the future of infrastructure resilience with cutting-edge sensor technology and AI. We're going to explore how Damian is turning complex infrastructure challenges into clear opportunities, transforming road management and enhancing global infrastructure performance, which we all know we need. So let's dive in with my friend Damian. Hi, Damian. How are you today?
Great. Thank you, Gary. Yourself?
So tell me a little bit, can you share a bit about your journey from leading technology and integrated control technology to founding TDRI, and what inspired that leap?
Yeah, I can. Look, I think I've been extremely blessed in my career trajectory and have had just an uncountable number of learning opportunities along the way. So, back in 2004 now, I think I was a final year student for computer systems engineering back at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. And I was looking for some work to fill in my work experience that I needed to finish my degree. So I applied for anything and everything that was on the student job search board. And one that was local to me, that was probably my primary requirement at that point in time, responded and said, hey, come in and we'll have a chat. And so as a young, very excited engineer who'd been working very hard on a robotics project for most of the year, I was very proud to bring in this robot, and I was going to demonstrate all of the great things it could do. It was trained to follow walls and build a map of a room using sonar. So turned up to this place that was essentially an old boat building shed that had been converted into a little bit of office slash kitchen slash bathroom and a little bit of a work area for some manufacturing. And have a quick chat with the guy that ushers me in, and quickly get down to, hey, look, I've been working on things that I think are relevant. Let me show you what this robot can do, and put it down in the middle of the room. It immediately drives directly into the refrigerator and never moves again. So clearly it hadn't seen a big white object like that before. But that's all it took. I was hired. And so I began essentially being the first product test designer. So I was designing test systems for the very first product that the company made, which was an order of keypad alarm systems for condominiums in Canada. That was the order that kicked off the entire company. And from there, I continued working through my final year of university, starting some of the actual product design. And then from there, as I say, the incredible journey was being able to build out an entire product suite alongside the founder, and then begin building the teams, doing everything from selling things that maybe didn't really exist. There was a lot of smoke and mirrors in behind, and then madly going and making that work, to being live tech support, to working with customers on site, through to then, as we really expanded and grew, actually building out teams and, again, learning how humbling and how amazing it was to be able to create some fantastic careers for a lot of people along the way. And then through creating those teams, becoming CTO and looking after the entire both internal tech trajectory and, of course, the product trajectory of the organization was very exciting. So fast forward from that robot failure 17 years on, we are sold to private equity. And that was another fantastic journey, because we never even had a board of directors for those 17 years.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, and you know, look, full credit to the owners who were able to keep things together. And some days I think that was a monumental effort. but it meant that we then began to learn how to be a real big business, right? And that was amazing. I learned many, many things along the way there for the next 2 years. But it made me realize that the focus was less about research and development and more about company development. And I completely respect that. But I felt that I had an opportunity to do something more for the world here. And I actually had a couple of my own ideas that I wanted to bring to the table. Unfortunately, those are not what I'm doing right now. However, I'm very lucky to have begun working with a university team who have some incredible technology that genuinely is new in the world. It's not a variation on something else. It's a way of doing something that simply hasn't been done before, which doesn't happen too often these days. And I don't take that statement lightly either. To now be able to genuinely do something that I believe can significantly improve things for everyone. But the opportunity certainly comes with its own set of challenges. And coming into an area where something hasn't, like this hasn't been available, means that there's an education process as much as there is just an opportunity to present some technology to enable people to actually use something like this. And that really comes back to the, well, how do we do more with less? Because these people are never given more money to bring on new technology. And they're certainly not ever given any more time. So my expertise or my experience in technology export, so over 90% of what I did in my previous life there was about export from little old New Zealand, meant that the natural inclination was to move directly out of the sort of great testbed that New Zealand is into understanding what we can do on a larger scale. And naturally, the US is one of the first places to go there. But recently as last week, we've also been investigating, understanding what we can do in Europe through some pull that's happened there from some companies that would like to partner with us. So the technology is actually the easy piece to all of this. The challenge really, as I say, is that education, that understanding. And that's not easy as an electrical and electronic engineer coming into the world of civil engineering.
So, you know, you're really pioneering technology to use physics informed sensors and AI to measure subsurface moisture. How does it work?
Yeah, so this is a completely novel way of using time domain reflectometry. So time domain reflectometry has been used for decades to establish where there might be a break in a cable. So it's really good at finding discontinuities in an object that has conductivity. Now, what, and again, I can't take any credit for this, the incredible sensor scientists at Lincoln University did. And they started this development in 2004. So officially well over 19 years of development into this, is that they developed a way to create an antenna system that is then able to use the same effect of time domain reflectometry and the identification of changes in amplitude and time delay of a pulse non-invasively or wirelessly. So they created an antenna system that sets up an electromagnetic field around it and in our application in roading. By placing that down very close to the road surface, it actually penetrates underneath. So we can fire pulses along this antenna system. And essentially what happens is the more moisture there is under that road, the slower that wave travels down that antenna system and then is reflected back. So we can measure how long that takes. And there's some information in the amplitude response as well to tell us how much moisture is present in that asphalt and aggregate and soil under the road surface. So this is replacing or providing an alternative to essentially digging a hole in the ground, taking a sample, putting it in a microwave and figuring out how much water dries out of it. So very, very different ends of the spectrum in terms of one might take you an hour and you've got to shut down the road, and the other in the same amount of time, you've done 150 miles of roadway.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, you talked about, I read that you said seeing the unseen. And how does PRI's technology change the way municipality or governments manage the infrastructure projects. What are they going to do differently?
Yes, so that's the both again opportunity and challenge here. Right now, they're not out there digging holes to figure out how much moisture is there, but and this is something that I've learned. Another founder said that it's really important that we don't treat civil engineers like people that are being ignorant. It's very important to understand that they know that all of these problems are going on, but it's very rare that they're given all of the necessary resources and capability and capacity to do what they need to do. So what that means is, I would say 100% of the time, the engineers that we deal with actually know that there are massive issues going on due to moisture. So frost heave is a big one of those every spring. And in hot conditions, you get a situation called flushing, where that asphalt binder can actually be squeezed out of the road surface like toothpaste. Oh, it's quite amazing to see.
And imagine how that affects the longevity of the road, right?
That's right.
The road infrastructure in danger, right?
Definitely. So they know that these problems happen. But knowing and having the experience and the opinion that it's a problem and having the objective data and evidence to actually do something about it in a very risk-averse environment are two very different things. And I completely understand. I would not want to be in a situation as an engineer where I'm responsible for a $100 million plus roading project and I want to bring something in because I think it's a good idea, only to find that could put that entire piece of road in jeopardy, something that should last 25 years, only lasts 5 years. And I'm not going to find that out for 5 years, but I've got to make the call now. So bringing on new technology has to be done extremely carefully, and there has to be a lot of process around it. And we're a little bit different in that this is a relatively low risk technology versus, say, putting a new type of binder into the asphalt that goes on the road. But the culture is still the same. And so the education and the understanding that, again, this is an objective data set that can then be used to plan and optimize the planning of what you are doing so that you can do more with less is what we're really offering here. And the most simple way to do that is, again, take this objective evidence of how much moisture is under the road and use it just to plan out where you're going to manage and maintain the drainage under the road. So you can imagine the average city has 1,000 miles of road, 2,000 lane miles of drainage ditches and culverts they have to maintain. And they probably get funding to do about 3-4% of the work that they need to do. Currently, they're planning that by starting at one end of the city and going to the end, a cyclic phase. What happens over those years as they do that work is there's areas that are at higher risk that are failing before they get to them. And that's a big impact because the average road construction cost for rebuilding something is around 1.6 million USD per mile. So that's huge. Where you can go in now and say, well, look, we can see that we've got moisture issues in this area. We're actually, still halfway up the city right now. We haven't got there, but we can come back around and we can eliminate those issues. We can dig out the swales, the ditches on the side of the road. We can clean out those culverts, or maybe we have to go and drill in some additional trenching. Something that's relatively minor, doesn't cost us $1.6 million to do, but is going to save that piece of roadway. And the academic research that's been done, and as we've begun work in New Zealand, we've been able to back these numbers up, is that by managing and mitigating that moisture, you're going to increase the lifetime of that road by 2.5 times. So something that's only lasting 10 years today could actually last its full design lifetime of 25 years. Mm-hmm. So that's a generational impact when we're talking about how much money we're having to spend and how much we can improve things.
But part of the challenge is, I've been doing this startups in Silicon Valley for almost 40 years.
Mm.
One of the things is getting the word out, right? And it's like having a Ferrari in the garage, and we took a company from basically the beginning to a $1.35 billion exit. Mm-hmm. And been through this a lot of times and been in AI 29 years myself. So, you know, the key is getting the Ferrari out of the garage, and it's not just getting it out of the garage, it's winning the race. And one of the things we did at GSD, which is that, right, it's to go down through and find those Ferraris that have the potential and then put them together so that they can win the race. And not a lot of people think about it. They look as a shotgun rather than a laser beam. But everyone's right. Listen, I want to switch gears. You emphasize the importance of challenging the status quo. I've read that in some of the things that you've written and talked about. And how do you, in terms of the company, foster a culture that encourages innovation while maintaining clear strategic goals?
Yeah, that's a big challenge, and that comes back to so much of this being very well put, getting the party out of the garage. So really the hard part of what we're doing here is not the technology. It's developing the right story. It's developing the right evidence and structure and process to be able to create a level of comfort in people that, again, are traditionally very risk averse, and rightly so, to do something new. And that takes a number of trials and failures in the approach, in understanding how we deal with government. And yeah, I would say don't ever try creating a startup in GovTech unless you're really looking for an awful lot of challenge there. And so, but of course, the converse of that is we have an opportunity to do great good. So really, the innovation comes from speaking to those customers. It does not come from us sitting around and thinking about what we can do. The university team that we worked with had done an exceptional job of developing the core of this technology, but the application of it comes from understanding what those customers really need. And so one good example of that is what we have done recently around increasing the measurement depth of the system. So we initially from experiments understood that, hey, the first sort of 6 inches of asphalt are pretty important. But by talking to the customers, we understood that, hey, a lot of the problems are actually coming from what's in the next 12 inches of the subcourse, the aggregate that's sitting there, and then the subbase, the soil itself. And so that then drove the next piece of work that we had to do around being able to measure to that increased depth, to bring that back and actually generate the right kind of value for these customers.
You know, so you go down through and you worked all over the world, but you have to export technology, and there's export control, there's challenges, but what unique challenges or opportunities do you see in bringing this advanced infrastructure tech global, international? What kind of things? You're bringing it to the U.S., there's export controls issues there, export control issues from New Zealand to Europe. So how do you deal with those? And here's the other thing. How do you deal with things like GDPR?
So firstly, I'd say we're very lucky in New Zealand that generally people like hearing made in New Zealand, and technology is accepted quite easily coming from New Zealand. Now, in saying that, the landscape is changing. You know, the tariffs are forefront in everybody's mind, and a big concern for us as well. Now, given the type of product that we produce, where this is not just, it's not a phone, it's not a relatively small device, what we're planning to do and what we are doing actually as of this week is manufacturing locally. So again, that drove a bit of the innovation for us, and that what we produced is a system that can be relatively easily manufactured. It breaks down into a number of simple to assemble components so that we can actually manufacture locally. And so this means we can actually have something that's got a made in USA stamp on it when we get it out of the factory. And I like the idea that we're now going to be able to support local manufacturing when we do that. And that then when things do go wrong, it's going to be much easier to have something rebuilt, repaired, replaced locally than it is to have to ship that from the other side of the world.
So, Damien, going down through your own personal journey from a technologist to being, the co-founder, founder of a company, how do you go down through And how do you deal with going, because there's a lot of the companies that I deal with worldwide are technologists. How do you go down through and how do you learn how to build a business? What kind of mindset change do you have to have?
So I was very lucky to sit at the table alongside the original founders, husband and wife of ICT. And so I learned an awful lot by osmosis. You know, I saw a lot of mistakes, but I saw how the company grew. And I think I learned that a lot of the things that need to be done are very tough decisions. So bracing yourself and learning how to process those and make those things happen is definitely a very important aspect of moving from being just a technologist to actually being a business leader. But again, the biggest thing for me is not, and when you don't have a large team of developers with you, this perhaps comes a little bit easier, but not spending your time obsessing over a perfect product. You're not making something that is going to be seen or purchased by 10,000 companies immediately. It's not going to be distributed to 34 different countries on day one. So as long as you're conscious and transparent about the fact that you're taking customers along for a journey, you can build alongside them. So I think not letting perfect be the enemy of good is probably one of the biggest mindset shifts that you have to make. You know, for me anyway, I always take it very personally if a product or idea fails, and you have to learn that that's okay. And that, again, as long as you're transparent about that with customers, they're actually quite accepting of that. And them having some investment in the process actually improves the relationship.
You know, you're going down through. So what's next for you in TDRI? And are there any exciting projects or developments you'd like to share with our audience?
So literally yesterday, I was out here testing the very first pitch mount system. So our first version of this was in a full size tow behind trailer. And we've now miniaturized that down to something that means essentially anybody can use it. You can put it on the back of your pickup. You can install it up underneath a full size truck that might be doing other road assessment surveys. And what that means is it completely changes how we can approach the market. And that's really important for us in the US in particular, because there is actually an industry around collecting surface condition data today. So they use LiDAR, they use video, and they combine that information into a very accurate picture of the surface condition. So knowing that that infrastructure already exists, those vans are out there, we needed something that was easy for them to bring along for the ride. And what that means is that can really consolidate the cost and bring much greater value to those agencies, municipalities that are paying for this survey to be done already. Nothing worse than somebody having to drive the same roads multiple times to pick up different data sets and unfortunately having to pass that cost onto the taxpayer. So we're very excited to have significantly reduced the size of the system to enable that that distributor layer in our go-to-market approach.
That's fantastic. What you're doing is amazing. Listen, we're coming up to the top of the show, Damien. And after we stop, if you want to stay on for a few minutes, we can talk. But I want to, so closing thoughts and how do people get a hold of you?
Closing thoughts. Again, we have to understand that the civil engineers and asset managers that look after our roads are being asked to do a monumental task on a shoestring budget. And that's what I've learned. I was the first to complain about potholes on the road. And once I understood why they do what they do, I had a huge respect for what they can get done with so little. So I think it's really important for all of us to be aware of the problems, but also appreciate that there's a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes. Look, for us, tdrisolutions.com is the best way to have a look at more of what we do.
Go ahead.
Sorry, if you lost me there, I just said, look, yeah, our website.
It was There's some strange weather here where I am right now. So go ahead. So you said the best way to get a hold of you is through LinkedIn, through Facebook, through
LinkedIn is definitely a great way. And our website, tdrisolutions.com, will give you some insight into the type of value we can add.
Thanks so much. So Damien, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me today on my show. GSD presents Top Global Startups. My name is Gary Fowler, and I'm your host. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you, Damien, for your journey for innovative solutions, forward-thinking vision, and resilient infrastructure. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in one more time. We are now, thanks to all of you, we've got over almost 60,000 subscribers, 1.2, almost 1.3 million views and growing. We appreciate that. Let's go out. GSD stands for Get Shit Done. It ain't about the talk, it's about the action. So if you need something, reach out to us. Hello at gsdvs.com. Damien, thank you. And again, thanks. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. Damien, now, if you can stay on, we can get together then after.
Thank you, Gary.